All right, coming up this week on The Course of Life, we recap our holiday weekends and the weekend at the RBC Heritage as well. Plus, we're joined by Brooks Austin from Fansided. He's joining us to preview this week's NFL draft, get you caught up on all the biggest storylines, and maybe talk a little bit about what that evil genius Bill Belichick has up his sleeve this weekend. But first, we tee off with the first tee shot. It's a sugar-free drink that's 5 seconds of effort and zero calories, but it's designed to let you focus on the golf course for the entirety of your round and keep you in the game. The first tee shot is made to elevate your game, keep you locked in and ready to perform, and each individual bottle is rich in vitamin C and can be taken on its own or mixed in with your water or smoothie. Mike, we got a big round of golf here coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah,
it's the Lazon Invitational.
So we really do, and I've decided I'm not going to play until then. I'm just going to let this be my first round, so I have no expectations whatsoever, but I feel like I still need to focus.
I don't get you to take many shots, but I'm going to get you to take a first tee shot before that round for sure. So if you guys want that focus feeling and you want to try first tee shot as well right now, you can go to firstteeshot.com and enter the promo code COURSE to receive 20% off your purchase of first tee shot. It's the pre-golf supplement that's far superior to a coffee or cocktail to try and shake off those first tee jitters. Again, that's firstteeshot.com and the promo code COURSE to receive 20% off of your purchase today.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to another edition of Course of Life, the podcast where we talk about everything happening in the PGA Tour, plus other things that interest us from around the world of sports and beyond. A little later in the podcast, Alex, as he said, we'll chat with Brooks Austin from Fansided. Plus, we'll talk about the injuries of plague, one of baseball's best teams. But first, it was all about the red tartan this weekend.
Love
at
it.
Harbor Town.
Yes,
it right was in my backyard week. In Hilton Head. It was really the only course that ever is able to follow Augusta National.
It is.
And we had probably one of the most loaded fields they've had out here in a long time.
It's a unique event, Mike, because it's kind of a shot maker's course. It's a shorter venue. It's got some really cool vistas. It's a nice kind of calm down tournament the week after the franticness of the Masters and the craziness at Augusta. And there was some fireworks on Sunday. If you tuned in late, you saw Cooch posted 11 under par. Dustin Johnson blew up, Mike, on Sunday.
Yeah.
He was in control of this tournament for most of the weekend and blew up on Sunday. He was out of the picture and lost the lead. And lo and behold, CT Pan claims his first PGA Tour victory. What a Cinderella story that is.
Yeah, a guy who wasn't even planning on playing in this event until just a week or so ago just shows up. And yeah, like you said, DJ blew it. He started blowing it really Saturday toward the end of his round.
Yeah,
I think the weather just seemed to get the better of him Saturday, and he just couldn't find anything to keep going on Sunday.
Yeah, it was interesting to see CT Pan kind of show up in the moment, too. Not the type of guy you'd expect to be clutch with pars and birdies when you need it down the stretch on Sunday.
Yeah, and this is a guy that now that he's in the winner's circle, we're starting to hear some really amazing things about him, things that he's done when you compare him to other greats in the game. So this is a guy that I think we're going to be hearing a lot of in the future, just someone to really keep your eye on.
For sure. He qualified for, I think, the U.S. Amateur at age like 14 or 15, Mike.
Yeah.
That's like some real big time stuff at a young age. So definitely going to be watching out for him. Mike, I got to shout out my gambling golf friends on Twitter, because one of them, at NYC Punter, he gave me the suggestion to put money on CT Pan at 66-1 on Wednesday as I was looking through my picks, Mike. I go to my bookmaker website, and lo and behold, I couldn't even place a bet on him. He wasn't even on the board on my bookmaker, so I just passed it up. I went with some other guys, and look what happened on Sunday. So shout out to NYC Punter. I'll have to be looking out for his picks a little bit more so I can get that coveted second win of the PGA Tour season. But it was a cool week to watch in the Low Country, as you mentioned, Mike. I was absolutely petrified when I saw the pictures of the Gators just absolutely everywhere on the course. There were babies, there were adults, they were next to hazards, they were next to bunkers. It was really freaking me out.
Yeah, you know, welcome to the Low Country. This is what we're used to down here. You're going to have a gator out there somewhere in your way. And they were definitely taking spotlight this weekend at Hilton Head. I want to talk real quick about another guy who we just don't talk a lot about right now. We talked about him a couple weeks ago, but we're going to the Masters about maybe getting another green jacket. Jordan Spieth, Let's talk about real quickly something that's just odd to me. Do you know he's ranked 204th in final round scoring average?
That is just absolutely deplorable.
Yeah, he put up a 4/75 on Sunday this weekend. And just so you know, there are only five guys on tour worse than Jordan Spieth in his fourth round average.
Which is absolutely insane when you think of the caliber player he can be and has been. And Mike, please don't. No one. I dare you. It'd be a real shame if you went back and listened to our 2019 golf predictions at the end of 2018, because I boldly predicted that Jordan Spieth was going to find his magic on the greens, and none of that has happened at all.
I mean, of all the guys that I don't want to see go away right now, Jordan Spieth is certainly not one of them. So it'd be nice to see if he can try to figure out what's going on and put it together. But he may just need to take a few weeks off and just hit the range with his coach and get away from the course for a while. You know, those alligators are going to eat his ball at this point, really.
Yeah, I know. He's hitting it in all the bad spots where the alligators are. That's always a bad sign. So, yeah. He is, like you mentioned, he's taking next week off. Next week is unique for golf fans out there. A lot of people don't realize that a few years ago, this New Orleans tournament, the Zurich Classic, switched formats. So now they play in two-man teams. It's a very cool setting. The players have walk-up music as they head to the first tee. Mike, we'll get songs, tweet those out later in the week. Mike's at MWRINC, and I'm at Course of Life 1. We'll be grading those over the course of the week, but pretty solid field because this two-man team competition, it kind of inspires a lot of guys to get together with their buddies, and there's some pretty legit pairings out there that could take this home on Sunday.
Yeah, give me your notables. Who do we need to be looking at right now?
I mean, Jason Day and Adam Scott, they've both been playing well. They're paired together, the Aussies. How about Sergio and Tommy Fleetwood, two guys that have been playing very well this season. The Bombers group is Bubba Watson and J.B. Holmes. Patrick Reed and Patrick Cantlay, the Patrick pairing, both of them playing pretty well in the last couple months. I'm going to be looking out for my Massachusetts boys, too. Got to shout out Keegan Bradley and John Curran. Fun fact, played against them in the state finals their senior year when they were at Hopkinton High School. They absolutely kicked our ass, and that's why they're out there on tour right now. So that's a guy I'm going to be looking out for, too.
How badly did you lose? How many strokes?
Oh, it was only 14, 15 strokes. No big deal. It was very, very, very competitive through a hole or two, you know? So, some other fun ones too. And the other one you got to look out for, Mike, it's time. We've arrived. The father-son pairing. Davis Love III playing with his son, Drew Love. So that's going to be really cool. Davis Love III, hey, he's won on tour as recently as a couple years ago. So who says a father-son pairing can't be electric? And Brooks Koepka playing with his brother, Chase, too. So it's a fun little opportunity to see a unique format with the two-man teams, and we're going to get some really, really low scores. So that's always fun for the generic golf fan, for sure.
Yeah, and I think just having some of those pairings, those are pairings we want to see out there on tour more often. And just the fact that they get to play together instead of playing against each other just makes it exciting,
yeah,
for sure.
So I'll put my picks up on Twitter again. It's at Course of Life 1. I'll be looking for a few gems. If you got any suggestions, feel free to hit me up because I need all the help I can get at this point. I'm about 3 months winless in the hole now, and I got a lot of stuff to pay for coming up in my life here, Mike. So it's time to win some money with these picks. So hopefully we can catch a winner this Sunday. Let's get to some clubhouse chatter. How about that, Mike?
Yeah, let's talk about our boy Kelly James.
Oh my God,
he had a dream week. What did he get to do?
What didn't he do?
That's so probably a better way to go.
If you want to check out a past episode of one of our cooler interviews we ran December 1st or 2nd week with Kelly James, musician, Oakley signed musician, does all sorts of sporting events around the world. He runs in a really cool circle because, Mike, not only did he get the private plane with Justin Thomas to his benefit in Cabo, spent a couple days in paradise. He followed it up with a round of golf with a great, great group of guys. He posted on his Instagram and a little Olympic swimmer by the name of Michael Phelps. Have you heard of him at all? Yeah,
I've heard of it. Wasn't he at 16 at Augusta on
the guys everywhere.
That last Sunday?
Yeah, he watched a guy win. I forget who won last weekend at the Masters, but he was part of that moment. Guy. And he's just rolling around with Kelly James the next week. And Phelps shirtless, not afraid to show off like his 20 pack of abs. He's still in peak physical condition amidst his quote-unquote retirement. So yeah, Kelly James living the dream week for sure.
It's just crazy. Hey, another guy that we had a chance to talk with just a couple weeks ago was George Savarikas from the Golf Channel. He got something that I know I'm still searching for, and I think you are as well.
Yeah, the hole in one. Gosh. Yeah. And to get it like with your boys and like get the video when you walk up and take it out of the pin, Mike, that's the moment we're really all searching for. I had a buddy of mine who did it a month ago on our golf trip. It's really a special thing to see, and you just kind of feel like that, like, you know, it's like you're sending your kid off to college when you see a friend of yours make a hole in one. So great moment from George Savarikas as well. You can check out those past interviews on your podcast platform of choice. We've had a lot of great ones up to this point and many more to come. And Mike, one more golf note I want to get to. You may have missed it, but we had Saturday Night Live, and I'm talking about the LPGA edition. The Lotte Classic in Hawaii was a really cool event, finishing with a Saturday night finish. And Brooke Henderson, the Canadian, she goes back to back. I love her swing, her fire. She rolled to another victory there. And it was really cool to have the LPGA on in primetime like that. They kind of get that spotlight with some of their West Coast tournaments, as you'll see during the course of the year. But it was really neat to see her go back to back at a really cool venue in the tropics of Hawaii.
Yeah, you know, the women really, I see a lot more of the LPGA Tour being shared on social from PGA Tour and others, and they really are making some great shots out there, especially this weekend in Hawaii. You know who I don't think was watching this weekend, though? This guy, Stephen Moore, he's actually one of President Trump's planned nominees for the Federal Reserve Board. In like the late 90s, early 2000s, on some conservative magazine, he said something like, women want equal pay for inferior work in sports. Some really crazy shit like that.
I don't think he was watching the LPGA. That's a safe guess. No,
he was not watching the LPGA Tour. He's someone that I don't want to have a conversation with ever about different things like that. So I'll be watching the LPGA Tour. We'll be keeping an eye on it and talk about it more through this podcast, because there really is a lot of great play out there. And I always felt that the great thing about golf is it doesn't matter how good or how far you can hit the ball, you're going to have a good time out there, and anyone can win on any given day.
Hey, I know this, Mike. I know he's got some cronies probably at Augusta National, and I hope he realizes that they just crushed it with the National Women's Amateur, and that tournament's going to be around for a while, whether you like it or not, Steven. So fun little note there, and we'll see how the LPGA rolls on for the rest of the season.
It's going to be fun times for sure. We will talk about all that next week. Let's move on to your chat with Brooks Austin. But first, let's talk about one of our wonderful sponsors, Izzo Golf.
Yes.
They're the creator of the world's finest golf bags. You can find the best bag that's perfect for your game. Whether you want a stand or carry bag or a single or dual strap, Izzo Golf has you covered. Featuring power pockets to keep your devices charged, magnetic ball pockets, and free embroidery. And Alex, I don't know if you saw this, just released some really awesome new color combinations for their bags.
I did
too.
See that. Yeah. Always adding to the rainbow. That's good.
I'm jealous already. You can visit their website at www.izzo.com to buy your bag today. Izzo Golf, innovation and feature design for golfers by golfers. Again, that's www.izzo.com. And now here's Brooks Austin.
All right. Next up on the tee from Kennesaw, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta, just in time for this week's NFL draft. He's a contributor to FanSided's coverage of the 2019 draft and the humble host of the NFL Mocks podcast. Brooks Austin joins the Course of Life. Brooks, how you doing this evening?
Alex, I can tell you've been a listener of the NFL Mocks podcast, or at least you checked it out. Indeed, I am the humble host of the NFL Mocks podcast, man. And I appreciate you for having me here on your podcast here. Maybe talk a little golf. Of course, I watched Tiger Woods win the Masters.
Boy, we've been pouring over that the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a good time to be covering the world of golf, and it is a good time as well to be covering the draft. So honored to be here, man. I appreciate you for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Brooks. So let's kind of get right into what's happening, just so people get a refresher. They haven't tuned into much of what the pre-draft buildup's been at what's happening at the top of the draft. Everyone kind of knows the backstory on Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray. He had the decision between baseball and football, stuck it out with football. It seems to be working out pretty well in his favor with a Heisman Trophy, a playoff appearance, and now he's scheduled to be the number one pick overall by the Cardinals. Is there any doubt that it's Kyler Murray at all? Or anyone else that the Cardinals are possibly looking at one, or is this just unanimous and over and done?
Man, you know, for the most part, everything we've heard, even dating back to the combine, has been Kyler Murray. But I just want to take a minute to just think about how fascinating it is. If you just rewind 365 days last year, you know, we're looking at Baker Mayfield going number one, and in steps this Kyler Murray guy down there in Oklahoma. We knew he was a first-round draft pick in baseball. And then the Athletics, of all people, the Oakland Athletics, just say, yeah, Kyler, you can go try that football thing out, and, you know, we'll see you in a year. Well, it looks now that, you know, they've completely wasted a first-round pick. So what an odd stance we are here now. I bet if you asked all NFL analysts, just myself, a year ago, what our thoughts were draft-wise on Kyler Murray, obviously this preceding the Heisman Trophy run that he had there at Oklahoma, I don't think anybody would have mentioned even entering the NFL. I think we were all pretty much assuming that he'd sign or fulfill that multi-million dollar signing bonus there with the Athletics, man. But what a wild ride. We're here all the way up to the NFL draft now. But as we sit, man, here on a Monday night leading up to the draft, I don't think it's anybody but Kyler Murray at one. But just kind of to encapsulate the full thing for all you guys living, what you call it, the course of life.
Pretty much, yeah, it's us.
Golf heads out here. No, it's pretty much locked up at this point, but totally something unexpected if you would have mentioned it, you know, like I said, 365 days ago.
It really is, yeah. And so basically we're locking him at the Cardinals with the number one overall pick. Cliff Kingsbury has moved over there as the head coach, and it looks like that could be a very intriguing pairing to watch. So the question kind of remains now. The Cardinals just drafted Josh Rosen. So what does that mean for him, and kind of where do you see his stock and where he may potentially be moving, or is there a chance that he's staying in Arizona?
You know, there's only, you know, three first-round caliber quarterbacks in this year's draft, and it's obviously the big three names, right? Dwayne Haskins, Kyler Murray, and Drew Locke. I said them in that order because that's the way in which I have them ranked, but there's a handful of other teams. You know, there's more than three teams, basically, is what I'm trying to tell you, that actually need a quarterback, and you get a guy like Josh Rosen for pennies on the dime. This is a guy who all of his signing bonuses, $11 million signing bonus, has already been picked up by the Arizona Cardinals. So, you know, if you're a team like the Washington Redskins, and maybe you don't think your guy's going to fall all the way down there to 15, again, you get a starting caliber quarterback who was worth the 10th overall pick last year in Josh Rosen, who, you know, if he were to be in this year's draft class, Alex, I would probably have him, you know, either one or two fighting it out with Dwayne Haskins on my big board, just to give you kind of my thoughts on Rosen last year out of the draft. And again, you get him for nickels on the or pennies on the dime. You don't have to pay his signing bonus. You get him for one point, I think it is $3 million this year, 1.9 the following, and then in the last year of his rookie contract, you get him for 2.4 under a deal, and then you get to restructure him after that. So again, all these teams, you know, that have a late first round pick. You know, the Raiders have two first round picks. If they're two late first round picks, you know, after four, they have 24 and 27. So if they're a football team that isn't necessarily sold on their quarterback there in Derek Carr, then potentially they take a swing on a guy like Josh Rosen. Because to me, Alex, I don't think you're going to get trade compensation, or at least Arizona's not going to get trade compensation past that 15th pick in Washington.
Okay.
Because that's what I think they're waiting on. They're basically waiting on the biggest offer. For people out there wondering why he hasn't been moved yet, that's why. I know it's long-winded, Alex, but it's a long story.
It is. Yeah, now thanks for breaking it down for everyone, too. And I got to wonder, I'm originally a New England guy. Is there any chance that Bill Belichick swoops in and maybe takes a look at this? I've heard murmurs that maybe he might be interested in Rosen, but it's an interesting thing to certainly conspire about.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a guy, you know, to me, if I'm Bill Belichick, to be honest with you, Alex, I'm not trying to fight that battle again. We've been on record multiple times with Tom Brady. He's going to fight this thing out and try to play until he's
45
or 50 years old. So he's 42 now. Assuming he holds true and holds pat to everything he said in all of the press and all the media, that he is indeed going to try to play until he's 45, that's burning another, you know, all 3 years of that advantageous rookie deal that you would have with a guy like Josh Rosen in that trade. So, again, I'm not necessarily prone to believe that Bill Belichick wants to fight that uphill battle all over again, considering he just traded his future away and Jimmy Garoppolo, all for a second-round pick, I believe it was, which offers were much, much higher this time last year
in
the NFL draft, if you remember.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll take a half step back on those potential rumors. One other team I do want to talk about. My co-host Mike is not with us now, but he's a big New York Football Giants fan. He's been struggling with life recently. Very confused as to where Dave Gettleman is trying to take this team. He can't understand how Eli is looking to be not only kept around, but possibly even extended. So the Giants, I believe, are picking a couple times in the first round. I've heard things like Dwayne Haskins, who you mentioned earlier, the quarterback from Ohio State, or maybe even David Jones or Drew Locke. I mean, what do you think the Giants are possibly going to look to do in the first round with those picks?
Yeah, so the Giants sit at 6-17. And just to help your co-host out a little bit, just so he's not completely ready to torch Dave Gettleman and do all that kind of stuff, I don't know if the Eli Manning decision is a Dave Gettleman decision. I think it's more of a Mara family decision. A lot of times in the quarterback, starting quarterback discussion, especially with one as illustrious as Eli Manning there in New York, they love that guy, right? He's won their first two Super Bowls in quite a long time. So I think that kind of resilience to nudge him out the door has more to do maybe with ownership, which that's never a battle Gettleman's going to win. But as for what they're going to do here at 6-17, the rumors in the draft world, Alex, is that they really like Daniel Jones, the guy you mentioned, the quarterback out of Duke. He just seems like a Gettleman guy. Gettleman, to me, in every other position outside of the quarterback position, he's looking for, you know, extreme measurables, right? You better be big, you better be tall, you better be fast. But for some reason at the quarterback position, Dave Gettleman has always, you know, tended to lean more towards the intangibles guys. And that's exactly what Daniel Jones is. To me, if that's your guy in Daniel Jones, I think you can probably wait along till that 17th overall pick, or if you see quarterbacks starting to fly off the board, potentially use some draft capital to move back up from 17. I don't think it's advantageous of the New York Giants to take Daniel Jones at 6. I think that's a way over draft. Because to be honest with you, Drew Locke probably won't even be off the board at that point. But again, if that's your guy, I would take, if I'm the New York Giants, I'd take a pass rusher there at 6. You can definitely get, you know, a guy like Montez Sweat, or potentially, you know, best case scenario, a guy like Josh Allen somehow falls to you at 6. I don't think that's going to happen. But still, you can take your, you know, your pick at a premium pass rusher that's left on the board there at 6. And then hope Daniel Jones falls to you at 17. And if he doesn't, Alex, or if, you know, you want to tell your co-host, if he doesn't fall to 17, it's okay, because take best player available. You're going to play Eli Manning this year anyways, and take a quarterback next year in a really quarterback-heavy draft class.
Good for talking him off the ledge there, for sure. So we'll watch out and see what the Giants do with those multiple picks in the first round. One player that's intriguing that I'd like everyone to hear a little bit more is, whenever you get a comparison to Rob Gronkowski, it's very intriguing. One of the top, if not the top tight end on the board is TJ Hawkinson from Iowa, who frankly, I didn't get a chance to see a ton of in his college career. You have him in your mock draft going, I believe, at 12 to the Green Bay Packers. What does his stock look like to you, and are those Gronk comparisons valid at all?
All right, so I have a couple rules here on the NFL Rocks podcast. Rob Gronkowski is a comparison that I truly never throw out. I think he's the greatest tight end to ever play the game of football, not only because of what he can do in the passing game, but what he did as a blocker. If you're not a real nerd in the terms of football, if you don't break down the film, you don't get a chance to really appreciate what that guy really did. Down in and down out in the NFL. So the Gronk comparisons are off the board. But
like,
if there ever were, and I wrote this in one of my articles, if there ever were to be a player that might be worthy, slightly worthy of a Robert Gronkowski mock or comparison, it would be TJ Hawkinson for all those reasons you kind of laid out. And like we talk about in Gronk, TJ is definitely going to be an end-of-the-line blocker, is what they call it. He's definitely going to be able to handle professional defensive ends, and he is an incredible playmaker. The 4.78 he ran at the combine, we call it game speed in the football world. When you turn on the tape, the guy can still move. He leaves defenders, so even though he may not have turned in a 4.5 flat like his fellow Iowa Hawkeye and Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson is definitely going to be a real playmaker at the next level. If I were to give him a realistic comparison, Alex, I would more say he's a Zach Ertz type, but he's going to be asked to block a little bit more at the next level because he's capable of doing so.
And that's fair. So we'll be looking to see where he goes as the first tight end off the board in this weekend's NFL draft starting Thursday night. One player I want to get to, I am based, Brooks, in Austin, Texas, much like your last name. So I've gotten to see some Longhorn game over the past few years, and I saw a classic earlier this year. I was in attendance for the Texas-West Virginia game. It was one of the bigger Big 12 games of the season. You may remember West Virginia won a thriller, and they won on a Will Grier two-point conversion. He had all of his tools working for him in the second half of that game, and he's become a very trendy player to talk about in the last couple months as we build up to the draft. What do you think about Will Grier's potential? I will say, as a guy who reads a lot of Patriots news, is there any chance that maybe Bill Belichick or the Patriots look to move up to get him? And where do you think you might see him getting drafted on the board?
Fun fact about Will Grier, he's actually not the most famous Grier brother. For those of my people who remember the famous app Vine, Nash Grier, his brother, was Vine famous. If you don't know,
wow, they are related. Nice, good nugget there.
That's his little brother. So a little tidbit about Will Grier: he'll never be the most famous Grier brother. But I like Will Grier's game. I think he's a guy that can make throws from all the platforms. Right, that's what you look for in the NFL. I'm not so hot on Big 12 quarterbacks coming out. Right, I see a lot of air raid offenses. I see a lot of guys who chunk it all up and down the field against the likes of defenses like Oklahoma State and whatnot. But nonetheless, getting back to Will Grier's game, I think he played with a lot of weapons at West Virginia again, and had an historic career there in South Carolina. I think he had something insane like 98 touchdowns senior year of high school. But nonetheless, obviously goes to Florida, has, a PED suspension or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
And then comes to West Virginia and has his career there. I think you get a shot here, right? Second to third round, maybe mock here on Will Grier. I think he's in that range of guys like Jared Stidham from Auburn and maybe even Ryan Finley from NC State. So kind of battling it out there for that second tier position. As far as, again, your pass at 32, I think the New England Patriots are more in the sense of taking guys that are going to help them now in the first round. I don't think we've seen him take a first round quarterback as long as I've been alive.
You're right.
I know Jimmy Garoppolo was an early second round pick. I believe they moved up for him. But again, I think they're more willing and more likely to take an impact player there at 32. If Irv Smith's there, they love tight ends, right? They're going to need him. This is definitely a tight end class where they could double up at the tight end position as they did in 2010 with Rob Gronkowski and RIP Aaron Hernandez.
For sure. Yeah. So that's definitely something to look out. Yeah, you're right. I don't know if they're going to take that reach. It's kind of a sexy idea of having Will Grier on the Patriots under Tom Brady's tutelage. But you're right. Bill Belichick does draft function first indeed. So I'm going to look in that direction too. One other guy I want to shout out from my time here at Austin, one of the most entertaining Longhorns of the past few years, and also one of the best names in the draft, is wide receiver Lil Jordan Humphrey. Now, everyone in the Austin area loves the fire he brought to the Longhorns offense the last couple seasons. I know he's not projected to be a first day guy, probably looking towards the latter half of the weekend, but where do you think he might fall for our UT fans listening to the podcast?
So, this is a classic case, and I have a couple of these kids every single year. You come through the draft process and you're evaluating them, and you really expect great things from them. But here's all I would say about Will Jordan Humphrey, Alex. I don't want to be too negative because I know you're from the Austin area.
Oh, fire away. It's okay. No hard feelings here.
He turns in the 4.75 at the combine, right? And it's not a great time. But, my problem isn't with Will Jordan Humphrey because these kids, they want to get to the league and start getting paid as fast as possible. My problem is with the advisor or the agent that didn't realize the very first time he ran a 40, because Alex, that 4.75 he turned in at the combine, he may have had some nerves and whatnot, but I guarantee you that's the fastest or one of the faster times he's ran in the last 4 months. And I also guarantee you it wasn't the first 40 he ran. So as soon as the football season ends, right, as soon as they get done with that bowl game against Georgia, all the players, they probably take 4 or 5 days off, let their body decompress, and then if they're getting ready for this NFL combine, if they're getting ready for this NFL draft process, before they declare, they start going through these drills. They know what they run in the 40. Mm-hmm. And the first time Will Jordan Humphrey turned in a 4.9, and his 3-cone came back at a 7.09 and whatnot, 7.10, he starts turning these bad numbers.
Man.
It's probably the time to look at the young man and say, hey, we've still got a senior season left. Our starting quarterback that we just started building chemistry with is finally coming back, and we're finally turning, you know, Texas is back, right? We're back. We saw that all over the news, right? Everything's going good at UT. I think he's just a player that maybe needed a couple more, you know, a little more seasoning at the collegiate level. But I think you're looking at, a 3-4 round mock for this player. And, you know, he's always going to win a 50-50 ball. I'm just terrified that he may turn into Kelvin Benjamin.
That's an,
you know what I mean?
It's an interesting take, and I respect it too, because that was kind of the thing, was him and Colin Johnson and which way they'd go. And I believe Colin Johnson's staying, and little Jordan Humphrey went. And so we're going to see how that decision pays off for him. But one more quick comparison I want you to make before we get some sort of late round sleeper. There's a couple guys who, if you're a Patriots fan and you're looking for a short, undersized, scrappy slot receiver, there's one guy named Andy Isabella out of UMass, and there's another guy who we've seen seemingly forever in college, which is Hunter Renfrow from Clemson. If you had to take your pick between those two, which one do you think has the chance to maybe have that kind of slot receiver, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type success if they get in the right offense?
I mean, if I've got to take a flyer on one of the two, I would definitely take Isabella. I mean, you're going to turn him a 4.35 at the combine, and then you turn on the tape of what he did against some of the Power 5 schools like Georgia. I mean, you see him burn two deep safeties against Georgia within the first half. I mean, within like the first five snaps there from UMass, he takes a deep post and splits two high safeties like it's nothing. So the game speed from Isabella is rather insane, and not to mention what he can do in the return game. As for Hunter Renfrow, man, I don't think he ever dropped a ball in college, and he's one of those guys. He's like 7'11", man. He's always open. You know, I'm cool with the Hunter Renfrow game. You know, it is what it is. I don't necessarily see, you know, any type of all-pro in his future. And, you know, one thing that also I wonder is whether or not Hunter Renfrow can impact games in the special teams units. Because one thing, Alex, as soon as you're drafted past the fourth round, you know, as soon as training camp starts, you're in the special teams meeting rooms.
Yeah.
And you're trying to earn a spot. So, that's kind of what Hunter Renfrow is kind of looking at moving forward. But, you know, the slot's where the game's moving. That's where it's impactful in the NFL. We see that it started with Wes Welker back in like 2009, 2010. So, I mean, kind of fairly good comps, right? Short, speedy white guys out of the slot.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see where those guys land as well. Hey, Brooks, before we sign off, just give everyone a quick shout out and let them know where they can find more of your draft coverage as we're watching all week. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so if you're not listening to Alex over here on this podcast, you can check us out wherever you find your podcast. Just search NFL Mocks podcast. You know, we're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all that. You can check me out on Twitter at Brooks_Austin_FS. And if you want to check out any of my readings, man, I'll be covering the draft all this week. We'll be letting out a podcast Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday morning, recapping every round for you guys if you want to listen to that. And again, if you want to check out anything I write, feel free to visit us over at NFLMocks.com. Alex, man, I appreciate you for having me, buddy.
Good stuff. Thanks, Brooks. Appreciate you joining the Course of Life.
Yeah, man.
Welcome back, Course of Life. That was the perfect teaser everyone needed for the NFL draft this weekend. Should be good. And Mike, your Giants, you're still hanging on to Eli. Your GM's pretty delusional. He's even looking to possibly extend this guy. I mean, you got two shots in the first round. Are you going to draft a quarterback and bite the bullet, or are we just going to do this Eli thing again? I don't even know.
You know, I like that we finally got rid of Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think that's a bad move. I don't really, you know, it was a deal good or not. I don't know. We'll find out in the end of the day. But Eli's done. He's got 1 year maybe left. You got to draft a good rookie. We got good placement in the draft. Get a quarterback in there. Make him your franchise guy. get him in there halfway through the season. Let Eli mentor him and let him start to know this system. And just let Eli tell Eli, try to put him down gently. Tell him, okay, you're done.
For sure. Yeah. So we'll see if Brooks's predictions on the Giants and all those other picks do come to fruition. Should be a fun weekend to track the early movements in the NFL offseason as we begin with draft weekend, though.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let's talk real quick about my other New York team. And your Boston team too, Ara. Let's talk Yankees first.
Yeah,
let's talk
half baseball. Of the Yankees, you mean?
Well, really, it's more like a quarter.
Oh no, it's gotten worse. Oh, that's terrible.
It's gotten worse. Judge is now gone. Who knows how long? So, the really interesting stat I saw with Judge going out now: there are only four position players from the opening day Yankee roster that remain on the roster today.
That is wild. That's quite an injury bug.
I mean, it's pretty atrocious. The fact that the Yankees are still hanging in there and playing close to 500 ball is pretty impressive.
Indeed.
So we'll see if they can keep it going. Let's talk though about your Boston teams real quick. The Red Sox had a sweep, and a couple other teams also had some sweeps for the first time in Boston history, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, well, Sunday was a wildly historic day. I mean, this is all-time I'm spoiled material, Mike. I say this over and over again on the podcast. I'm sure people are sick of hearing it. But Easter Sunday, we had a Red Sox win, a Bruins playoff win, and a Celtics playoff win all on the same day. Mike, this is the first time since 1980 that something like this has happened in Boston. And I'm not really sure if it's happened many other times in sports. Just another way to show you that we are just remarkably spoiled as Boston sports fans. So the streak rolls on. Red Sox finding a little bit of rhythm with the sweep last weekend and the Devil Rays in Tampa Bay. So I guess we just gave you guys a little bit of a head start in April. I'm going to term it like that, fully back in, and the train rolls on.
Yeah, you know, I will say, you see a lot of teams in baseball have really cold Aprils, just can't seem to get it going. First couple of weeks are really rough, and then they just flip the switch, and they just turn and they start rolling. You saw that out of the Yankees last year, and the Red Sox, I believe, too, didn't have a hot start. And then these guys went on to really just dominate in the division. So we're going to see what happens as the season rolls on, and we will talk about it. You can see us talk about it on Twitter. I'm at MWRINC. He's at Course of Life 1. You can also follow us on Facebook if you don't already.
Indeed.
Course of Life Podcast. You can see us post there, as well as know as soon as our episodes are live on your favorite podcasting app. So that's most of what happened this past week. There was also some holidays that happened, Alex, this past week.
Yeah, a little Easter Passover combo.
Passover. Happy Passover, everybody. Happy Easter to those of you that celebrate as well.
Indeed.
It was a good weekend. I had some family in town. And I had the opportunity to bake my family's flourless chocolate cake for the first time in quite a few years.
Oh, flourless. Nice move there.
Yeah. It's kosher enough for Passover.
Like it. Good move. Yeah, and I didn't get too much of a typical Easter dinner, but I was home for a wedding in the Boston area for family, which was fun. Mike, I had a little episode on the plane ride back. It was not a very big deal to anyone except me, but I need to just get your quick take, and I need to see where you land on this one.
Okay.
I need to know where you lie on reclining your seat on an airplane. A, do you do it? B, have you ever done it? And how often would you say it gets done to you, being you in the back?
Okay, so I got a couple different things I could talk about here. I've done it before. I reclined my seat. I have never, when there is someone sitting behind me, reclined my seat entirely. I've reclined it maybe an inch or two just to give myself I'm not quite as upright in my seat. And what's really interesting, and I actually just saw this the other day, I don't remember what airline it is, but there is one of the legacy carriers that's actually going to be reducing the amount of recline.
Yep, you let it in.
Seats.
You let in perfectly, Mike. I think it's something like 20-something percent they're reducing the recline. By, I believe it's United Airlines, and I got reclined on, Mike. So and here's the thing. I was in the second to last row of the plane. So my moral dilemma becomes, you know, do I then recline to match the recline in front of me? But then the person in the last row of the plane, they can't recline at all.
Well,
it's a burden I put on them. I chose not to recline. I'm the better man. I know you can thank me later, but that's what happened.
Well, I mean, we could get really deep in this conversation, but I'm 6'1". I have long legs. So when someone reclines, I already don't have a lot of leg room. When you recline, you take away even more of it. Me reclining is not going to improve my leg room situation.
Yeah, right. It's not a leg room thing. It's really a TV view and comfort and space thing.
Yeah. And I mean, at what point do you tap the person in front of you and say, hey, I'm really sorry. Do you mind just I've never done that. That to me is almost like I'm just afraid of what might happen.
No, yeah, I just get silently mad and then I just rage on a podcast platform a few days later about it, and I don't really bring the issue to the surface or anything like that. So, you know, here we are with that. So,
well, can you shout out that flight number and your seat so that person is hopefully listening?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Knows that we really hate
25E. You were a dad. You were working with a little kid. You were never sleeping at any point in the flight, so I didn't feel it was justified for you to recline. But so be it. It was a clean flight. Got back safe and sound, and we're on our way. So that was a fun little flight story, and there'll be many more to come in our travels here in the upcoming years. But again, for Michael, I'm Alex, and thanks for listening to The Course of Life.